Hey guys, this is Jeremy Sasser, host of the OnScript podcast powered by NHA. On behalf of myself and all of the other podcast hosts on the Pharmacy Podcast Network, I'd like to extend a heartfelt thank you to all of the frontline pharmacy personnel, including pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, and all other pharmacy support staff, for continuing to work to keep us all safe and healthy. Your selfless and relentless spirit is greatly appreciated during these extraordinary times, and we all stand with you. Be sure to follow the PPN as we will provide updates and pertinent information as often as possible. Be safe, be well, and thank you.
You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
This is OnScript, hosted by Jeremy Sasser, a podcast publication partnership between the Pharmacy Podcast Network and National Health Career Association. Our podcast is dedicated to providing the pharmacy technician workforce with news, real-life stories, and discussions that can impact personal and professional growth. Here's certified pharmacy technician and National Health Career Association content strategist, your host, Jeremy Sasser. Let's get OnScript with NHA.
Pharmacy Podcast Nation, thanks for joining us for another episode of On Script, powered by NHA, the only podcast on the Pharmacy Podcast Network dedicated to pharmacy technician practice. By informing, sharing stories, exploring unique care paths, career paths, and a plethora of other topics affecting the pharmacy technician workforce. And of course, I'm joined today by my co-host. She's intellectual, always knowledgeable, a regulatory ninja, if you will, Jessica Langley.
Thanks, Jeremy. He gives me way too much credit.
Stop it. So work-life balance can often be a challenge, specifically finding time for self-care. And actually, you and I were just having a conversation about this over lunch last week, a couple weeks ago. Yeah, we know it's so important, and particularly those who are working in healthcare. In pharmacy, we spend a lot of time on our feet, oftentimes entire shifts, anywhere from 8 to 12 hours on our feet. We don't have breaks for meals. So not only is that challenging in and of itself, but of course, finding the energy after that to go out and exercise can be quite challenging.
Yeah, and if you're doing 10 or 12 hour shifts, if you're the only one there or you're doing second or third shift, it makes it, you know, sometimes even worse because you're working alone, you're having to extend even more energy when you're transferring patients or, you know, just doing the workload by yourself. So definitely I remember those days where I couldn't remember if I ate or when I had time to use the restroom, to be honest.
Well, and I think we oftentimes say, well, that was my exercise, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't incorporate into, an exercise plan that involves hitting or targeting different muscle groups or working on flexibility, strength training. And even recently I've gotten into meditation. Whole facet of, self-care. So
yeah, I think it's important to think that we might have gotten our steps in, but really stepping back and asking ourselves, is that enough? Or what else should we be doing?
Gosh, I don't want to age myself, but I remember we had pedometers and I'm like, what is this amazing scientific breakthrough that counts my steps?
Yep,
oh my goodness. I even had the Nike shoes with a little thing you put into it.
Yep.
It would tell you how far you would walk.
I remember
whatever.
That too.
Not very accurately. At any rate, I'm super pumped about today's guest. Joining us today from our sister company under the Ascend Learning umbrella at NASM to provide tips and valuable information to all of you listening out there who are working in the pharmacy trenches day in, day out. Today as a guest, we are very fortunate to have Rick Ritchie. Rick is an NASM master instructor, holding a master's degree in exercise science and a doctoral degree with honors in health science and exercise leadership from California University of Pennsylvania. He's also the host of the NASM CPT podcast, which I highly recommend anybody listening to this podcast listen to.
Thank you.
Awesome information. So, Rick, thank you so much for taking time, man, to join us and give us some good information.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners about just some of the things that are going on in the stressful lives that you two were talking about a moment ago, and what are some of the things from our perspective with the National Academy of Sports Medicine and what we do and how we can create hopefully some change and make people feel and function a little bit better while they're at work.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I have to begin just real quick by saying my wife, Lindsay, is an NASM certified personal trainer, and she's a head coach at one of the Orange Theory Fitness studios here. And she's an avid listener of your podcast and, quite frankly, a bit of a fangirl of yours. So the fact that I have you as a guest today, I have scored major points at home with my wife. So even more thank you for that.
And what's your name?
Lindsay.
Lindsay? Hi, Lindsay.
That's awesome. So Rick, maybe you can
If she's anything like your like my wife, she won't be listening to my podcast, so she'll never hear that.
She will listen just about to this point right here before turning it off. But yeah.
We'll get her for a few minutes.
Exactly. Good. Maybe I'll get her to subscribe because I had you as
there
a guest. We don't know.
Nice.
So, Rick, I mean, can you take just a little bit and just start off by telling us about your journey and how you got to where you're at today and what you're doing in the fitness industry?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. I started as a personal trainer for one very important reason. It sounded cool. So I wanted a free gym membership, and that was a means to do it. It sounded like a cool job. And I think a lot of people in this job will tell you, I got into it. This is why I do it. This is why I do it. But that's not why they started it. Usually people start it because they think it's just pretty cool. And we stick around because of the changes that we help create with people and the benefits that our services provide. And so I stuck around and stuck it out. And, you know, it's pretty challenging initially. And then, you know, when you see what you're doing and how you're helping, it became valuable and I wanted to learn more. So I went back and I was like, what certifications could I get? I wanted all the top things. And I had already had my NASM, certified personal trainer certification. I went back for some of their specializations. And then I thought, let me go back to school and really solidify what I'm doing here. So I went back to school for exercise science, went back to school again a few years later for massage therapy, and then went back to school a few years later for my doctorate in health science. And that's kind of where I am. But you know, to go from being a cool job to being a job that makes a difference, and knowing that and understanding that created a whole different world of passion. It's a relatively high attrition rate in personal training. So I think it's a lot of those people who think it's a cool job and then find out it's still a job. And it's not as cool as they thought it was going to be because of the work you have to put into it. But when you get that passion behind it and you realize how much you're helping people, it creates a lot of value.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I think oftentimes they don't take into account the business aspect of, you know, oftentimes being their own contractor with a gym or even being 100% on their own and having to build up clientele. I mean, you know, just like a doctor doesn't become a doctor for access to the hospital cafeteria, you know, becoming a personal trainer for access to the gym is like, you know, probably not a wise decision. And, you know, the clientele, you guys help them in so many ways. I think they often, the layperson doesn't understand the level of knowledge that you bring to that process and all of the science behind it. I mean, even myself, until I took an exercise physiology course in college, you know, I was blown away by the things that you can calculate when you start getting into VO2 max and EPOC and some of those types of things. And just the science behind it was fascinating. So there's definitely...
Well, that was a big deal for me because I thought it was going to be easy to be a personal trainer. Right? And then My first certification was the NASM, National Academy of Sports Medicine, and I got the textbook, and I was like, what? I thought it was going to teach us how to count to 10. Like, I can count reps. And then there was all this science behind it, and there was all this assessment, and there was the follow-up, and the understanding of movement and joint actions and planes of motion and leverage and, things that... you probably don't think that personal trainers are educated on, but certainly it's a fun job, but there is a lot of education that goes into it, and there's a lot more to learn. And that was the fun part for me, is just continuing with learning and becoming a lifelong learner so I can keep it up.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen the glazed look on many a student's faces when I taught briefly this kind of the science before getting into the details of being a personal trainer. I don't think they come into it realizing that they're going to learn kinesiology and origins and insertions of muscles and,
right. And
you know, have to know that stuff and have to know if I want to isolate this muscle, this is the motion or exercise I need to have somebody do. So,
well said.
Became a weeding out process for those who quite obviously were not serious about it. But I think that's a good thing, because those that are serious about it, embrace it, learn it, love it. And those are the ones that apply it and are successful
once they get their
certification. So not unlike a lot of professions, pharmacy has been experiencing a lot of burnout lately. I mean, there was a New York Times article just recently kind of exposing some of the pressures that particularly retail pharmacies are under to hit certain metrics, whether that's a certain volume of prescriptions filled, whether that's converting a certain number to auto refill, whatever the case may be. Burnout is a huge issue in the profession. So how can exercise, or what is the benefit? What is the science behind how exercise helps with stress reduction, helping with burnout, just helping us kind of live a better life outside of our work?
It's a great question. And there have been really a wonderful amount of studies that have been done on exercise effects on stress, exercise effects on anxiety, but not as many on burnout. I think there's correlations there, but there have been studies that have been done on burnout and work-related stress. One of them that I looked at particularly, and I found it important because it was dealing with people who were on their feet a lot, and it was just saying that the exercise intervention had such enduring effects on this work-related fatigue and other broader indicators for employee well-being that it just kind of shows exercise as, in their words, a powerful medicine for those who comply with the treatment. So for the people who do it, for the people that do take on the exercise, it's more than just like an orthopedic relief, something that can help you feel better in your body. But there's that other sense of well-being that takes place there as well. And so as biochemical, we know, I find this pretty interesting. For many, many years, we thought that endorphins might be the runner's high, and they still might be. We're not totally sure yet. But one of the things that also gets released are endocannabinoids. So this production of endocannabinoids, and there are a lot of people who use exogenous cannabinoids, which would be things like marijuana. Chocolate also has it, so I feel like that's probably a pretty good reason that a lot of people love their chocolate. But exercise goes into those same receptor sites. Well, those receptor sites weren't designed for marijuana or chocolate. They were designed for exercise and that high that you feel from doing a relatively rigorous intensity exercise helps to provide that. We also know that exercise helps with dopamine production, and when you have dopamine production, there's this kind of conversion from dopamine into for all intents and purposes, morphine, and releases things like nitrous oxide. And that gives us a boost of clarity and reduction of stress. So exercise has these wonderful, like, powers. And if somebody came along and was like, hey, I wish that we could come up in pharmacy with a magic pill for this, and we tried, but it just doesn't do it, and it doesn't do so in a kind of balanced way where we can help reduce stress, reduce anxiety, and surprisingly help your body feel and function better by doing something that stresses your body. And I think that kind of throws a lot of people off. By doing something that adds stress to your body, you actually help to minimize stress on your body.
Right. Well, it, you know, not unrelated to the study of pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics, where we get in metabolism, I think everybody responds to it too at a different rate. You know, just taking myself and my wife, for example, I have drank the orange Kool-Aid, you know, so I am a participant in the Orange Theory program. And while I'm there doing it, I am singularly focused on not dying. But after the fact, I feel great. I do feel great. But it's funny, you know, ask me what music was playing, ask me anything, I have no recollection of anything. It's like an out-of-body experience for me where I'm like, don't die, don't die, don't die, don't die. Mixed with don't fly off the back of the treadmill and look like a complete idiot. But, you know,
I guess if you go through all of those challenges, burnout's not going to be an issue.
Yeah, that is also very true, very true. But like somebody like my wife, she gets it immediately. You know, she's, if she goes on a 10 mile run, she may be, you know, kind of hurting a little bit for mile one. And then as soon as all of those things kick in, she's just like, she's a machine. I think it hits all of us a little bit differently. So you have to try different things, different modes probably, to see really what it is for you that works, because as great as exercise is, if it's not something that you're going to ultimately stick with, then it also doesn't have any value.
And Rick, maybe you can
share with
me, because we're not running 10 miles, right, as we're working or standing at the pharmacy counter or, you know, working in a physician's office or something like that. So in order to kind of make an impact on the mundane, yet sustaining being on your feet all day, are you able to provide a couple of examples, you know, understanding the environment in which they're working in, that might be able to help, or things that they can do during the day, whether it's, you know, our Apple Watches tell us it's time to stand, it's time to move, you know.
Oh, what would we do without the Apple Watch?
What are some of those things that we could maybe provide our listeners that could help them?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that, you know, without assessment, you don't get anything specific on what the needs are, but there are general things that we understand that are better for us. And so there are a couple things I want to say here. One is, I will give some examples, but the first kind of hurdle you have to overcome is talking yourself out of doing it. And that's the very first thing, because I think a lot of us have an idea of what would be helpful, you know, whether or not we did some type of stretch or we did some just exercise in place. But then we start thinking, well, what does that look like to other people? And I've not done it before, so I don't want to do it now. And it's kind of weird. And we'll talk ourselves out of everything. And there was an interesting book, and it was an entire book to say the same thing over and over again. It's called The 5-Second Rule by Mel Robbins. And she just wrote a book that said, you have 5 seconds and before you really talk yourself out of it, after you come up with a good idea that's going to create a challenge. So exercise is one of those things, and instead of waiting, don't wait. If you know that you need to do it and you're in a place where you can, go into some exercises and don't wait 5 seconds because you know you're going to talk yourself out of it if you do so. So with that said, what are some things that you can do? I believe that you're going to experience several different issues. There's going to be some lower body stuff. There are going to be some low back things probably that people are feeling in these positions. And then there's going to be some neck and shoulder issues. So the first thing is, I would say focus on movement. And I think sometimes people will say, stretching is good. And it absolutely is. And we've got research that shows that stretching can attenuate some of the feelings of tightness and aches and pains. So, but also moving and exercise. So what I suggest for people who are kind of cooped up and need to do both is to find an exercise where you can do both at the same time. And one of the ways that I like to do this, there's an exercise called inchworms. And an inchworm is where you're standing up tall on 2 feet, and then you reach down like a hamstring stretch, like you're going to touch your hands to the floor. And then bend your knees if you need to until your hands touch the floor. I need to. My knees bend. And then try to keep the knees as straight as possible for as long as possible, but then walk your hands out into a push-up position. And then as you walk your hands back into a standing position, again, try to keep your knees as straight as possible for as long as possible. And for those with tight hamstrings like myself and a lower back, you're going to get a wonderful stretch in both of those positions, but you also help to create core stability. And it is really a lot to do with the tissues of the core stabilization that helps to support everything else. So as a great physical therapist who I follow and think a lot of, his name is Dr. Craig Wiedenson, he says the tissue isn't the issue, the motion is in the lotion, or the lotion is in the motion. So getting people to both stretch, but also to create movement at the same time.
So what you're saying is when, you know, we have a lead building here that we work in, and when I'm sitting at my desk for too long, my light goes off, and Jeremy always gets on to me saying that means that you haven't moved in a really long time. And now I can, he can stop making fun of me when I stand up and do an inchworm, right? And know that I'm
don't make fun of her.
To try and keep the light on and keep moving.
Well, yes, and the next time I find myself doing a burpee, you'll probably also think I'm doing an inchworm.
Sometimes my burpees look a lot like inchworms. So,
you know, that's...
another one that I like is called... Oh, sorry, but another one I like that are called... we call them cherry pickers, but I think if our Apple Watch is reminding us to move, maybe we'll just call them apple pickers. But it's where you squat down and touch your feet. And then you stand up high and touch the sky. So you reach up and stand up high. And it's just a nice way to create movement, to lubricate the joint, and that synovial fluid that starts to flow around the joints. It really only happens when you create movement around it. So doing that, and then you can transition your apple pickers from a squat position to a bent over position, like we talked about going into the inchworm, where you're doing the stretch as opposed to a squat. But adding both of those different modalities into it would be very helpful.
That's great. And you know, for anybody who's listening, you know, these are just body weight movements, right? This doesn't require anything. Yeah. No equipment, doesn't require a lot of time. You know, I don't know if you have a recommendation on reps or something like that. I can't imagine that this is like super intense high rep kind of motions, but just get you moving, get the body or get the blood flowing. You know, I think all of those are great things.
No, I'm not going to add any specific recommendations, because here's what people do too often is if I say 15 is good, and then somebody goes, well, I'm not really going to be able to do 15, so I'll choose zero instead. Because if you can't do 15, then people will often say, I can't do that, then I won't do anything. So a few years ago, I had a business partner. We started an online thing called the Daily Move Challenge. And this is what I would say most often, and I found it very important, because it was 5 minutes of foam rolling and stretching and then 5 minutes of exercise, all body weight stuff. And continually, I would say a little bit of something's better than a whole lot of nothing. And if you can't do, let's say the ACSM recommends that you should do 150 minutes a week of exercise, and that seems so insane to be able to exercise that much. So instead of doing 150 minutes, we keep doing 0 minutes. And I think it's a huge disservice to ourselves to understand that just because I can't get that 150 minutes, which is the recommendation, then I'll go with the zero instead. So be happy with it. I tell people, you know, that little bit of something's better than a whole lot of nothing. And if I have clients that say, if I go to the gym, what do you want me to do? And sometimes I'll say, what's your favorite exercise? And now they might say bench press. And I say, great, go to the gym and do one set of bench press. And they're like, what is that going to do? And I went, but because you've told me in the past that it's hard for you to go work out on your own. So just go to the gym, find your favorite thing to do, do one set of it. And if you want to do more, do more. And if you want to, while you're doing bench press, you do a few sets of that and you look around and you go, I'm going to do the leg press and maybe I'll do a few minutes on the elliptical machine or whatever. Then what I've found is that we've heard this phrase, the anticipation of death is worse than death itself. And I think the anticipation of exercise is worse than exercise itself. And if we can just give people something that they like and don't put too many constraints around what it looks like, then we can teach people to start enjoying exercise and make them want to do more.
Man, you do not know how true that is. Obviously my wife knows what every day's focus is at Orange Theory, right? When I go, I'm like, I don't want to know anything. I want to show up just as surprised as the next guy because I don't want to get in my head thinking about, oh God, this is a 2000 meter row benchmark. This is that. I just want to show up, focus on not dying, not falling off the treadmill, and just do it.
Good. I'm with you on that. And if we can simplify that to even, and I have to say, bless classes too. And Orange Theory has done really well with it. And they hire a lot of NASM trainers, so Holla. But to point out that they're doing such a good job. And what these classes do is they also take the thinking out of it.
Absolutely.
You know, but they can be wonderfully intense. There are also other classes that are out there that don't have that intensity. So driving people towards working with a personal trainer or going into classes, there's also plenty of evidence that things like yoga and Pilates and other kind of mind-body things, including meditation, can be very helpful in the process of not just feeling less stress, but also the benefits of kind of these musculoskeletal pains that come about as well.
Well, and I think that's great to really trim it down because we do oftentimes think about the whole exercise, nutrition, diet, health, and wellness is this big complex thing. And it definitely can be, like you said, there's a lot of science and everything behind it, but really it comes down to something is better than nothing and you just have to get started.
Amen.
Which yeah. I say that and I need to be like writing it on a mirror and looking at my fit, you know, have it stare at me every day.
Yeah.
I'm in that rut, you know, as a single parent for a long time, two small children, working full time, trying to make all the wheels turn. And, you know, it definitely caught up with me and I'm feeling my age. So I'm going to do my best to take your advice and really kind of, you know, simplify it and let's see what we can do. In transition, our organization, you know, Ascend Learning, who's the parent company of both NHA and NASM, has created a great working culture around health and wellness. And I know more organizations are focusing on this, but maybe you can share, because you're really deep in this space, the importance of creating an environment or a culture that allows for individuals to take that little bit of time or has other initiatives in place that support a person's health and wellness journey. And it's odd because, like Jeremy said, it's typically the health folks that are the worst at it. You know, it's the respiratory therapy students that are all smoking on their break, you know?
Yeah.
you know, or we're standing all day and not doing the things that we're telling, you know, our patients or the individuals that we're serving to do. So how can their work environment help in this specific case?
I think there are a couple of things here, a wonderful, wonderful question and great lead into it. Several things here is, one, you just want to minimize the roadblocks and the barriers that people are going to have. And, you know, what I did my dissertation on something called attribution theory and attributional retraining. And what that basically says is that people find things to blame because they didn't do things that they feel like they should do. And mine was specifically about exercise. And so people would find things like, you know, my family or my time or work and all of this had gotten in the way. And I found it very interesting that there were two parts of this attribution. It's what people think about themselves and it's what other people think of them. So when I asked the trainers if they thought that was true, the trainers almost inevitably said, no, everybody's busy. Everybody's busy. This person's not as busy as the other client I have, and that client comes in and trains here and does all this on their own. So what is it that kind of creates a sticking point? And I thought one of the great quotes that had come out of it is that we know that even though we attribute things to a specific thing, like I don't have enough time, that may not be true, but sometimes the perception of that is more important than anything else. So if I can help minimize time, that roadblock specifically, or I don't take away from your time with the family by creating a corporate environment and participating in maybe in a corporate wellness program where there's a fitness facility or a quiet room for meditation, then I just take that roadblock out. I don't add in a 15, 20, 30 minute commute to get to the gym, to get back home, to go and change clothes and get in the shower and all. Everything's kind of present there and simplified. So the, you know, having something present and close by is very valuable. And I know how valuable it is because people that even travel, get in their car and go to the gym will still circle the parking lot a dozen times to find the closest parking spot. And they're going to work out. So how can we actually improve that? And that's by having it as close to and a part of the fitness or the place of employment that people are. It's just not possible for all locations. And if you're working as a farm tech somewhere, then that's probably not going to be an issue or not going to be a probability for a lot of people. So, you know, creating some simplicity around what it is that you can do on site and having a culture where the people around you don't look at you as being strange for doing that. And I think, you know, a lot of the fitter people, if they were to do it, nobody would think anything about it. And yet the unfit people, the people who are struggling maybe with weight and with some, you know, pathologies, and they start doing exercise, and maybe we look at them with a side eye, or at least they perceive that to be the case. So actively encouraging people to exercise and not feel like they're being looked at strange in the office or wherever they are and doing exercise, because it's not just about the physical. It is about the mental. And Tony Robbins has a great quote, and it's a very short one, which is why I can remember it. And he says, motion creates emotion. And if we can move and we can come back and feel better because there's some type of movement and activity that's taking place that allows me to be more mentally astute while also feeling better physically, then you got to take advantage of it and develop that as a part of the company culture.
Well, and in that case, everybody wins, right? You win as the individual of improving your health. You get a clearer head. You could be more creative. You could be more astute, you know, in tuned with the task mm-hmm. that you're doing. And you can be more open and communicate better and in a better manner with the patients or the people that you're serving. So for me, you know, if an employer doesn't want to consider that, or they think that the time is too valuable, you know, to let people have 10 minutes or whatever, they should really take a step back and understand what higher productivity levels or what increased level of creativity or strategic thinking or would they maybe get out of individuals in the case, and especially in pharmacy. I mean, we're talking about dealing with individuals that are getting prescription drugs, and we know, you know, the importance of reducing medication errors and ensuring that, you know, we're doing everything the right way for that patient and their specific condition. You got to be on top of it. I mean, or else people's lives are at stake. And sometimes we do just need that mental break, mental, physical, whatever, like you mentioned, to just take a step back and relax in order to make sure we are doing our job to the best of our abilities.
Yeah, and I was speaking with a woman today that just said, we were talking about a corporate wellness program that one of the companies that I have in New York City does, and, you know, allowing people to have a break. And she said, yeah, we have to talk to people about giving themselves permission to do that. So a lot of times it's not even the company that puts that on people. The company may encourage it, but they don't give themselves permission to do it. And I think part of what we need to do as a company is not just say, you should take vacation, you have vacation, use them, right? But actively find out, when are you going to go on vacation? You need to schedule your vacation, not just because you'll lose your hours. We could give you a vacation because of your own sanity and your mental health. And same thing should be incorporated as far as exercise is concerned, not just put a memo out there that says, if you need a 10-minute workout break, exercise break, meditation break, take it. but actively encourage it and have that come from the top, and have the management be a part of it, and have colleagues and coworkers all inspiring each other to do something, because even if it's not much, a little bit of something's still better than a whole lot of nothing.
That's right. And helping change ourselves ultimately helps us change the people that we're working with. Like you mentioned, right on. That was the main reason why you got in this, because you loved seeing the change in people and everybody working in healthcare, whether it's pharmacy technicians, medical assistants, radiologic technologists. I mean, all of our jobs really revolve around that one concept.
Yeah.
So what do you think, Jessica? We have a gym downstairs. Do we now push for like a napping room or like a quiet meditation room?
Well, I don't know if Rick would say that napping qualifies as doing the movement.
Well, if the entrance is through the gym, maybe, or something.
But yes, of course. I know I do my best to try and clear my schedule, you know, even if it's 15 minutes. But as we mentioned, Ascend does a great job here of promoting that. And I think our goal of today is just, you know, spreading the word and the small steps that you can take and the simple and easy exercises that you can do to support those individuals that are listening today on, you know, just takes a little bit, just one step to get started. So we hope that helps them feel a little bit better and feel more empowered.
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe we will have some links to some additional information in the show notes mm-hmm. so that, you know, you can kind of explore some of these things on your own and really just, so like I said earlier, I think a lot of it is finding the mode that works best for you. I mean, for me, You hit the nail on the head about not having to think about it, not having to think, is today arm day, leg day, you know, what am I going to do? Being in a group environment that still has a oversight from a personal trainer to ensure that you are doing things correctly so you don't injure yourself adds a lot of accountability. For one, it creates a great community, but then also takes away that I'm at the end of the day, I don't want to think anymore. I don't want to make any more decisions. I just want to go and get my heart rate up for an hour, you know?
Right. Well, Rick, thank you so much. Any final closing statements that you would like to pass on to the healthcare space and the pharmacy technicians or even their pharmacists, their leaders that are listening today?
I would just say, if you think that personal training sounds like something that you might be interested in, then certainly please consider the National Academy of Sports Medicine, NASM, as an option. They're a great company. They have wonderful education. And to go through and understand a little bit more about human movement science and assessments and exercise and the benefits that that could relay, that could be good just as a personal experience that you would want to go through, or as a little side hustle that you might want to do at some point in your life. So it sounds like something you'd like, then please check us out, NASM.org.
That's awesome. And I'll also remind all of our listeners to check out Rick's podcast. It's the NASM CPT podcast. Subscribe to us, subscribe to Rick. Great content, great information, not just for personal trainers. I listen to it. I enjoy it. I am definitely not a personal trainer. My wife is, and she loves it. So definitely have, you know, if you were here and not in New York, she would be asking for an autograph. So... And as always, we encourage our listeners to email us here at OnScript at onscript@nhanow.com. You can also find a link to this episode as well as all of our other episodes on our blog at www.nhanow.com/learning-leading. Don't forget to subscribe there. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. Until we're back again, thank you all so much, and get out there and get moving.
Thanks for listening to On Script, where we cast a spotlight on pharmacy technicians, the services they provide, and to the patients they serve. So, for all the spatula warriors, TPN ninjas, and lieges of levigation, this podcast is for you. Subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or go to pharmacypodcast.com.